Welcome to everyone. Another keynote office hours. This week we're joined by Bazil, Doria as usual, and then we've got Zena, who is working on an aggregator of Telegram and LLM processes in an app called Command Center. So we're focusing again this week on the topic of bringing together modular components in a way that makes apps sort of easy and fun to build on Keynode. So I'll start with Zena. Zena, you want to, let's make sure you can talk, but the first question is for you. So we'll get to the app we previewed later, but can you just explain for us what Command Center is? Maybe give us an idea of the development process and the processes that you brought together into Command Center.
Sure. The idea is pretty simple. So essentially it's just an aggregator of different API keys that you have to enter once. And it's going to expand as the surface area of API keys expands too. So currently we have Telegram, OpenAI, and Grok. So you'll be able to do speech-to-text, LLM calls, the Grok LLM calls, and everything related to Telegram bots. And it's going to expand to have stuff like CoinMarketCap APIs and stuff like that. And while it sounds kind of boring to just have an API aggregator, what it allows you to do is it makes developing apps that riff off of that really, really simple. So, for example, in the demo app, all I'm doing is sending a voice command to my Telegram bot, and it gives an answer to what I told it with the help of the Grok API. And that part only took an hour to write. So it's really setting the groundwork for later composability. Yeah, that's the basic introduction. I think I could also say more about how we're planning to make this, how we're planning to make an LLM agent that is going to hook into the surface area of LLM, speech to text, Telegram, and other APIs.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so Nick has been working on that for the most part, but we're planning on using WIT files for inter-process communication. And that's basically just an interface defining the request and response types for processes. And what's really cool about that is that it's language independent. So any language that can compile to WASM, such as Python, JavaScript, Rust, Go, I think, can just import that WIT file dynamically from the App Store. And then you will know exactly how to message other processes. And the other cool thing about that is you can feed that into an LLM or RAG it if you have a ton of processes and tell it to send a message to another process just automatically. You can use it for function calling. And the stuff that this opens up is immense because it both allows ease of use within these processes, but it also allows for safety because we have the whole WASM sandboxing going on.
Do you want to tell us, like, we posted the video, kind of a sneak peek. It'll be taken down and put on the blog later, but it's a video of an implementation, I think, of Command Center. Can you just, like, sort of explain what you built? I think you say it took you about an hour after Command Center is done to build this app.
Yeah, so the basic flow is you message the bot on Telegram. You can send a voice message, and that voice message then gets downloaded, and then we send a speech-to-text request to transcribe it, and that is going to be the prompt that we send to Grok, and that then gets sent as a Telegram message. So it's like four steps, and those were really simple to execute. I think that was 100 lines of code. It would have taken a lot longer without that aggregator. I mean, putting everything together was the bulk of the work.
Why is Telegram sort of becoming like a front end of choice, I guess, for a lot of the apps that some of the apps at least that we spit out uses Telegram quite a lot for a front end?
Bazil, do you want to answer that or should I?
I can answer it. So it's like basically the question is why you use Telegram for then?
Yeah, why is that, it's not becoming de facto, but I mean, several of our apps have used Telegram as a front end, and I'm sort of interested why
the answer is that. Yeah. Yeah, so it's pretty simple if you look at it in time terms. We started this
Bazil, you seem to be cutting off a lot. I'm not sure if anyone else can hear you.
I'm having a difficult time. Can everybody hear Bazil okay? Because I'm not really hearing it. Zina, can you speak? Can anybody speak besides Bazil?
Sure, yeah. Yeah. I think it's on Bazil's end.
Hey, yeah. I mean, I can't hear him right now either.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, I can expand on his point. I mean, I feel like this is something that a trap that a lot of like back-end teams kind of fall into, because like, you know, there are projects where like the client has become like the moat. And I think that's just because like the amount of resources it takes ends up becoming like such a cost center that like it sort of needs to justify itself somehow. And so the business ends up like getting centered around that, when like ideally, especially in crypto, like backends can be moats in some way or another.
Okay. Sorry, that threw me off a bit there with Bazil. Yeah, let me get my notes back up. All right. So anyway, all right. We have, I'm kind of interested actually, like what are some of the unique things that you guys think? Oh, hang on. Bazil's back. Let me add him as a speaker. I'll give Bazil just a second to make sure he's working. I think it is. Bazil, if you can speak, try to go ahead. I'll just ask a question though. What are some of the other things that we might see kind of implemented? Like, I'm interested in, for instance, like using this for a situation where you can start using conditionals, for instance, in life. So like when the price of X drops below Y, maybe give me an alert or something like that. In daily operations, what kind of conditionals or what kind of other things do you see this app unlocking for us? Maybe Zina or Doria?
Sure, yeah. So you can have hard-coded conditions like the one you mentioned. So if the Bitcoin price drops below X...
Can you hear okay?
Yeah, I can hear. Can you hear me?
I'm not hearing Zina now.
Oh.
Okay, well, I hear him. So... Josh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Well, I hear Zina. I don't know if other people can or not, but yeah. Classic spaces. To answer the question, the conditional thing, like originally, like we thought about making just sort of like a full blown, like if this, then that style, application for this system. But the complexity, there's some interesting questions there about like whether that's actually desirable, because like there's stuff like that in the world, but as a programmer, it's like, well, if I just have the programming primitives, I can do it myself. And if I'm giving the programming primitives in kind of like a no code way to users, like what are they going to do with it that I can't just provide for them already with like a specialized interface. And the whole point of this system that we're building is to make apps better. So it's almost like Keynote itself is like the if this then that. And then the programs are just the individual applications of that.
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering at this point, if like, it's just you and me that can be heard. Yeah, Zina says in the chat, Twitter Spaces.
No, everyone could hear Zina but you.
Yeah, so like, I don't know, some schism has happened where I can no longer hear anything. We may have to switch over to something else in the future.
It's funny, this platform is like offensively bad. It's like excruciatingly bad. But yeah, I mean, the command center program is pretty exciting. I think to continue with what I was saying, like, the first thing we want to do is just build out individual applications of this, as opposed to sort of like the fully generalized no code style, if this, then that architecture. But I think another thing that we should talk about is how we're going to use AI to mediate all this stuff. Because that's, to me, the real, like, if this, then that architecture is just asking a language model that has all of your APIs sort of ingested in its context window, to do something for you. And it just pipelines out the various commands it has available to itself to achieve that goal.
Well, I don't know. The what do you guys want to do? Because, like, I can't hear Zena, so it's a little difficult to continue. Should we try something else?
Sure, I guess so. Sorry, guys.
Edgar, what do you think there?
I mean, Doria and Zena, can you guys have a conversation? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
I think that's fine.
You guys can hear me, right? I mean, I'm coming through.
Okay. Yeah, you're fine. I guess Zena can hear me, but I can't hear him.
This is riveting content.
It is good stuff.
And you still can't hear me. Apparently not.
Wow. We can all hear Zena. I mean, this is already a bit of a wacky space in general, but just I think maybe Doria and Zena, you guys can have some of this conversation, and then I think it may just be tough to salvage at this point. But I think that if you guys want to talk through, you know, some of the application and command center stuff that we haven't hit yet, then that's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, let's just do that. And Josh, just assume that somebody's talking.
Okay, I'm here for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, you know, let's keep going about the stuff that I mentioned.
Yeah, so you mentioned the if this, then that. That was the initial idea that we were going for, but then we realized LLMs can be really good at chaining stuff together and acting as agents for the whole surface area that we're starting to expose. So we're thinking of this problem as we have an input space and an output space, and we can chain different outputs together and obviously chain different inputs together too. And this can compound really well with the whole setup we're having, because we have WASM modules, we have clean interfaces between those modules soon. Processes will be able to fetch the interfaces between of other apps, for example. And I think the kinds of agents we can build from that will be very, very interesting, and stuff will just compound over time.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah,
sure.
So Zena, kind of everyone who has some kind of integrated system like this or API, sort of, you know, thing that enables APIs, says that it will be perfect for LLM agents. It's kind of like a super standard pitch at this point. What are the challenges that you've come across in trying to, like, realize even the start of that? That, I don't know, I'm not even going to say, like, anything leading, like, make you bullish on us, but, like, more like, yeah, what are the hard things that people aren't thinking about when they kind of, it's just so easy to say, like, oh, our thing will be great for AI agents.
Yeah, so they don't work out of the box. You have to do a lot of hacks in the meantime. So if you have a huge API surface area and you're just throwing that out to the LLM, it won't have any idea what to do. But if you guide it in some way, and there's lots of different ways to guide it, but for example, nested types of messages where you call it multiple times, or having the proper descriptions and context management, these things increase the likelihood of it doing the correct thing by a lot. And the good thing about the processes being so modularized and so well defined and having these clear boundaries, that is a huge advantage for our LLM agents.
What have you had to add at the kind of API level, process level to make this work a little bit better? Or at least I think you haven't even had it working as much yet, but like in order to anticipate making it work better.
Messing around with different models. The last time I tried it, we didn't have everything in place that we do now, but I think, now we're way better. Our setup is way better,
What are some of the things that have improved? Because this was only like 1 or 2 months ago.
There's also the capabilities model that is connected very intimately to this, because generally speaking, like when you give an agent access to some tooling, you have to be really careful about sandboxing it. And this is sort of like, you know, AI safety in the real world, like applied. But we have that built in to the, you know, APIs of all these programs, because you do have a capabilities system that governs whether a certain task can be, a certain API endpoint can be called, or a certain interaction can be done. And that's all mediated by the kernel. So the AI doesn't, it has pretty tight boundaries over what it can actually do, and you can control those boundaries.
What were some of the things that were added since you tried this last time, Xena, that made it easier?
The width boundaries that are being worked on. So we used to have to either, so we used to have a very unprincipled approach to how we message other processes with, for example, helper functions here, structs there, and nothing was unified. But the way processes work now is, or soon, is that we can define a WIT file that only defines structs that represent either requests or responses. So stuff is very clearly delineated, and it's very easy in the WIT file to describe the relevant points. And the other part is dynamically fetching these interfaces is going to be much, much simpler than what we had previously.
Okay, cool. Did we handle the why Telegram question earlier when I was cutting out? Because I could go revisit that and kind of give some more flavor there. But if you want to move on or we have it, that's fine too.
I have no idea if they're speaking, but yeah, he did. Go ahead.
It's funny. I can't hear okay. Bazeel now. The spaces.
This is so weird. I'm on a normal.
What was the question? If it was directed at me.
It's fine. It's just.
No.
Can you hear me now?
The issue isn't you, Bazeel. We're having all kinds of things where some people can hear some people, and it's like a sort of like 10 one-sided conversations or something. It's really totally insane. This is it's breaking boundaries in terms of what bugs you can have in a product like this.
Yeah, it is.
X is going to zero.
I mean, you know, I would love to just talk about this for a minute, because we've been doing these spaces for like a couple months now, and like I want to rant, because sometimes it's fine, like sometimes nothing goes wrong, but we have to be so careful on the back end. And it's like people talk a lot about like, oh, like Elon fired 85% of engineers, like now, and the platform still works. It's like, you know, the platform works 80% of the time. The reliability of the website has gone down tremendously. And keep in mind that like software reliability is usually like the whole point is like how many nines can you measure? Cause like the difference between 99% uptime and 99.999 is like really high. And those are the orders of magnitude we're talking about. I think the reliability of Twitter has gone down like 5 orders of magnitude, to be quite honest. I think it's awful now. And yeah, sure, it works most of the time, but yeah, it's a Pareto principle. Yeah, you can fire 80% of the engineers. You'll lose 20% of your overall engineering ability. That's the whole point. And I don't know, whatever. It's frustrating because it becomes a political point. It's politicized now to say, you know, you don't need all those people, but factually it is not the case.
So he clearly just fired too many. I mean, there's probably some number between the number he fired and the number he should have fired, and he overshot.
It's political bullshit. I mean,
well, that could be as well.
People really want to believe that, like, they want to believe whatever they already believed, right? And they just sort of like project out whatever Elon Musk is doing onto that. But like, yeah, oh, cool. Like, fire the diversity, like the DEI enforcers. Like, they're making the company worse. Like, okay, sure, yeah, they're probably like overpaid, overstaffed. But then like, fire all these engineers who weren't doing anything anyway, man. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, now your spaces are hilariously bad, and you fired all the people who are like in charge of sort of like checking on that and doing stuff. But and the funny thing is, like, the support, the glazing, if you will, is coming from other engineers who want to like believe that they can be like the 10x guy to like do all this stuff. But I don't know. As somebody who writes a lot of code, I mean, yeah, no matter how good you are, like, you need a bunch of people doing QA, doing like design work. If you want like a really polished product, which I think if you're a gigantic company, you probably should want that. It's different if you're a startup, obviously, but yeah, super frustrating to the politicized stuff just goes in every single direction at once. I think the quality
Twitter has a uniquely bad technical history, and we've like debt, and I'm not sure how much was ever cleaned out. There's probably some people I could ask, but it's always been like uniquely bad and kind of stitched together with duct tape and kind of just keeping going and then hit a high enough value after that with enough people using it. And I know pretty talented people worked on it scaling like 10 years ago, and maybe they may have done some substantial fixes or gotten it right over time. So there might have been something okay to start with, but yeah, it's a tough problem relative to a lot of stuff that other platforms do, just in terms of just like the sheer volume of data and the expectation of like really low latency. So I don't know. It's a hard one. I mean, I'm sure it was like overstaffed, and like definitely their ability to ship new features has slowed to pretty much zero for a lot of reasons. So I get it. I mean, I can easily imagine they like sort of took a step back by firing a lot of people, but like, maybe the only way they were going to take a step forward then was by like sort of rehiring after that and getting stuff in place, which I would imagine is the plan. But it's really maybe. I think the more interesting thing to talk about with them that maybe can smoothly tie it back to us is they definitely want to become an everything platform, and they've had a lot of technical barriers in doing so, and it's taken a long time to kind of strip down a lot of the technical debt. And I'm not sure sort of what you do about that, or if there's like a lesson in there for anything that wants to become an everything platform, but it's that like, it's clearly quite hard past a certain point and is like probably frustrating them given what they have to do, what Elon has to do to get the valuation, back anything near what he paid.
You know, it does, that is a very interesting thing, because like, you have a sort of single purpose app that is run by a company that it clearly can be profitable, can be done at scale. And then you sort of have these immediate pressures to, you know, vertically integrate because obviously that's how you expand your market cap, but also because other people can't do those things. Like, we as a society do not get like interesting apps, partially because the network effects are locked into these like ossified platforms. So the only way we get like, a, you know, a really good marketplace is if Facebook tacks it onto their social platform that already has the billion user network effects, you know, like somebody else can't just go out and build a marketplace website. And so like, it's funny actually, people talk about it as like greed on the part of the big tech companies.
No,
but
I don't think it's that exactly.
No, it's not, because like, they're forced to do it. Like, nobody else, like, they can't, I think sometimes they would give it away if they could.
Way of putting the problem is, if Elon wants to do an everything app, Twitter is his only realistic avenue to do it from. He like, right, actually sort right. of couldn't do that from scratch as a startup.
Yeah. And, oh, you know, funny enough, like, yeah, even if you lost like 50% of the original users, you would still have a thing that is more or less impossible to get at a brand new company, a brand new, like, you know, user network. So it's worth like 50%.
So what do you do about that?
Well, Jack Dorsey has been sort of banging one drum for a super long time, which is like turn the base identity thing into like a protocol so that anybody can hook into it. And like, I don't know. I mean, a lot of different people have done that.
Isn't that hard? That seems like hard to do because clearly there's like something that Twitter does on an engineering level that's like more than just like the identity or protocol where it would be like, well, I don't know. They probably could port their social graph over to something else. I guess would be technically possible.
Yeah, but it's definitely not trivial because like I don't think there is any major blockchain that could like let's talk about it through crypto because that's what we know about like that. If you were to say like, let's put the Twitter and let's not even say the posts because the posts could never go through a blockchain.
Sure.
I mean, the volume of Twitter posts is too high for any chain, no matter what chain you like, no matter how many rollups, right now. I mean, hopefully in the future that changes, but yeah, whatever. Let's just put the social part on chain. I still don't think fits. Anywhere.
You shard it in such a way that it could be run like with people like by people in a decentralized manner with like minor on-chain coordination, I think is the real question.
I think you could shard it, but the that alone is like an extremely difficult problem to get the reliability that they've you know ground out over 10 years of being a central platform. Their backend is sharded, right? Like they're using a distributed database of some kind. I'm not like, I don't know what their architecture is like.
But you can go through it and see how you have to do it, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I don't know. It's been interesting. Like a lot of crypto people have been sort of getting more into like distributed systems, research, which is good because it's the same field. That is like reinventing all the same things with different terminology. But if you're building a blockchain, like you should probably like the relevant background reading is in like distributed systems, like Dynamo, and others like, because that's what you're talking about when you talk about like a sharded chain and the interoperability between shards is just the same exact problem as consistency between shards of database. But just much harder and much slower. So I don't know.
But I think what people here are going to want to know is like, does that like even give any track from here to like some sort of wedge in applications where you start being able to build something and that has a path to like snowballing? Because it sounds like very sort of defeatist in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah, it does sound defeatist. I think if you're trying to like tackle the world scale problems, I think defeatist is the right way to look at it right now. I don't think there's a non-defeatist answer for that. So you have to change the problem that you're trying to solve and not focus on, oh, we're going to like scale all of social media.
Yeah, but you need a way. I think in order to get people excited about the vision, you have to have like a plausible story for how you handle world scale. And I think there are plausible technical stories for handling world scale for social if you were able to start to like get some wins.
Well, sure. I mean, okay. I think the plausible direction as I see it right now is to have the simplest possible global state as the backstop. And this is basically what crypto does with money. This is the financial system answer. And then just have centralized services that hook into that. So like, you should have like a Merkle root of a social graph posted somewhere on chain, and then have the vast majority of users access that data and manipulate it through a centralized service provider such as Twitter. And then if somebody either is barred from that service due to political reasons or is like, you know, principled in some way that makes them not want to use that, then they use their own hookups, which are run like open source clients, public indexing or self-indexing, running your own node.
I think...
No, I mean, this is the escape hatch. This is like the...
I get it with the escape hatch, but very often when you're like maintaining a certain level of infrastructure, it's hard to do that. There's like, if you look at Twitter scale, there's only a few things that are like really, really hard about it. One is like when you have operations that have really high fan out, like when one node has to have everything it does go to like many others, that can like bottleneck the system really hard. Or when it receives a lot of things from others. And there are like ways to do that, that you could protocolize in various ways. I agree. It's definitely easier if you can run it as a centralized thing, but I think it's at least an interesting problem to look at what you can get if you piece together like a solid protocol, access to global state, the assumption that users can run nodes that are mostly on, but relax, like always on. I think you could do a lot of things with that. I don't know. I'm not willing to like declare, like, I think my main like thing right now is that there haven't been good off-chain primitives. Like, and when we say off-chain primitives, really all we mean is the ability to run and deploy off-chain programs that do interesting stuff with global state and kind of call back to it, reference it, can participate in protocols. And I think there's still like a lot of patterns to be discovered there. And that's at its like very start. And I'm pretty, I don't know. I think there's like at least a little bit more research to do, before declaring defeat there.
Okay. Here's a clarification on my defeatism, because I completely agree that a lot of the functionality can be sharded out productively. If you have what we're building, yes, like the off-chain clients. So anything that involves a group chat, one-on-one conversation, community level discussion, all of that stuff is like definitely easy to solve. And can even do interesting vampire attacks off of existing platforms. So I'm bullish on that. The thing that has me sort of, defeatist is specifically that like the market, the normie market has expressed a very clear desire for a product that indexes a global scale, feed of content and in a fairly centralized way optimizes for their engagement over that entire data set. So TikTok is like, I mean, TikTok has like, two orders of magnitude more users than Twitter, more active users. And it has that because it has this. Like it.
Does it have two orders of magnitude more?
100 times more.
It has 100 times more users.
It could. I mean, it's got like a billion.
Twitter is more than 10 million, I think.
But active, I don't know. Okay, like there's some. Here's a data point, right? It's like, if you have like 1,000 followers on Twitter, that's the equivalent of having like 100,000 followers on TikTok, just in terms of like the percentage of accounts. Like, I don't know. If you have like 100,000 followers on Twitter, you're in like the top 0.1% of accounts or something, or maybe 0.05. Like it's very few. And then TikTok has like 1 million of those accounts, maybe not literally 1 million, but the numbers are gigantic for TikTok. Part of that is because it's totally global. And if you're using the For You page, like you will get content from China and Africa and Japan and Europe. Like it's literally like, yeah, churning through like billions of hours of video to give you the single most engaging 10 seconds for that given moment of your life. And so if that's sort of the apex predator of consumer social right now, which I believe it to be, I think it's like, I think defeatist is the right attitude if you're talking about decentralized, like self-sovereign protocols.
for that.
Yeah,
specific thing.
Maybe not. Yeah, maybe not self-sovereign, but just like, I think there's more work to be done on, like, could you make a somewhat more distributed protocol and get it working?
I guess to me, like, I think that the place that we've been most productive recently and has the most direct value for, like, the people that know about us, the people in our personal social circles, is to build tools that work, regardless of how many users they have. Like, I think this is, like, the thing that I keep landing on, because, like, if you also, like, you know, just general, right, like, startup thing is, like, if you're not building for yourself, like, you're not building for anybody. So you have to build for yourself, you know, build the thing that you want to use. So, like, we're doing that with these products that basically, like, hook on to an existing data feed or an existing platform and just provide, like, a little extra utility for the individual user. And then, of course, you know, it goes up from there if you get your friends to use it and so on. But, like, yeah, I don't know. And I know this is, like, the opposite of what, like, a venture capitalist is looking for in a platform. Like, they want to, like, you know, blow up the
well,
total addressable market.
I think, like,
the
no,
maximum.
I think it's, yeah, but I think, like, this is, there's a few things here. One, being afraid of blowing up the market to the maximum is a close cousin of saying, like, something's not in scope. Like, if you don't do it, someone else, like, probably will, probably in a worse way. But I also think that, like, if you're gonna do stuff that, like, works when people, that doesn't require big, you know, network effects, if it starts to work, you very often end up with an adjacent product that does use network effects. And I think if you don't have an answer for how that does scale, it's going to take either some bad path or not do it, or be fully realized. And I think it's important to start thinking about, like, you know, how the scaling would happen with those things before it happens, as opposed, but there's, like, a big difference between that and making that the initial strategy. So I think, like, you're reacting a little more to making it the initial strategy, whereas I think, like, having plausible ways to expand that can be done. But I think also you would probably, like, benefit more by, like, learning the mechanics of how these, like, centralized systems scale, because, like, a lot of them do it badly. There are advantages to, like, being centralized. I mean, Twitter is just sort of, like, again, famously bad at it. A lot of it happens, like, pretty ad hoc. There's a lot of, like, post hoc ways to do it better that are now known. And I don't think it's at all impossible to, like, tweak parts of those to make them work in a more decentralized context. So I think it's, like, something that it's, like, a little bit not good to have an opinion on until you've researched, like, sort of how some of this actually happens at scale, like, with big data. Because there's a lot of, if you have, like, you know, some central sources, I think you can probably productively substitute central coordination and sort of ordering with global blockchains for some of the things that people use, like the fact that you own the service centrally for, and there's not as many differences between centralized and decentralized as you'd think at scale.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so interesting. So, well, I'm trying to do more reading about, like, distributed systems, like, kind of going back to the textbooks that I had to read in college and sort of
I think the super, I mean, I can give you some stuff that's, like, sort of super practical. Like, again, I think, just as, like, an intuition primer, not that their solution is perfect, but, like, it's, like, directly influenced by people spending time at Twitter. Like, I would read the, like, Rama Mastodon implementation post, because, like, the main reason that you quickly see all of the scaling bottlenecks and how they're handled, and you can start, like, cross applying.
Yeah.
So I think, like, stuff like that is a great start. There's, you know, good books on sort of just how companies handle big data. Everything reduces to, like, basically, like, queues and partitioning at the end of the day. And so you want to start seeing, like, okay, are there aspects of those queues and partitioning that you can, like, coordinate with a global system? And you start getting into, like, the meat and potatoes really quick. And I think that those are hard questions to even ask. If you don't, it's like a chicken and the egg thing. Like, it's very hard to start into asking those questions if you don't have something like we do.
Yeah.
Or to start, you have too many free parts.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very interesting.
This is one of the worst, like, it's, like, so funny that Twitter Spaces doesn't have chat. But to, as, like, a plug for our Discord, I guess, like, where would I put stuff? Like, in the comments?
You have to like tweet it out, and then, yeah, you have to reply to the tweet.
I'm gonna put it in comments of our Discord so that people
okay,
can
yeah, join the Discord if you're not. Everybody here's in the Discord, but whatever. These are recorded, and we're really yeah to add salt to the injury. We're using this platform to record podcasts, so like this now gets like put on a podcast platform, and that's where the listeners come in. So like. The technical difficulties just feel that much more painful because we're like trying to record it. Yeah, we should talk about this more async in the Discord, and get some feedback from people out there that know a lot about sort of the centralized alternatives or the centralized solutions to scaling. I'm curious, like, I'm definitely curious what like a optimal peer-to-peer content delivery mechanism looks like if you're just talking like global. Like, how do you, like, if you, like, we should maybe run an experiment of like, if we have like an IPFS hash content, like, how would we deliver that in network, like, efficiently? What would be the best way to do it that would scale really, really hard?
I think you can also make some like sort of leadership or running the thing assumptions as long as those don't, as long as you can maybe decouple that from also run, like own all of the servers and be responsible for running them. I think that might be the one where you can like sort of productively make trade-offs.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, like to bring it all the way back around to like why we're using Telegram, like I think the last place that you want to do all this work is on the client side, like, you know, like, cause that's like, that's also a trap that people fall into is like, they get like, sort of like the minimum viable backend running and then they spend forever. Like, this is like far
too. Oh, dude, well, did you get my, I think my answer got cut off, but it was like kind of exactly on these lines when Zena asked earlier. So I was saying that like, if you start by developing your own front end to do this, of course there's the obvious thing where you don't get to explore the business case as fast, where the business thing we're trying to solve here is, you know, how can you ingest data via an LLM, start piping it in an agent form, start doing interesting things with it, stuff like that, right? Obvious.
Yeah.
But I think the more subtle thing is that once you start investing in making that UI, it's very easy for that to kind of capture the company or project or division or like group of people. And they start like, they start tuning their marketing load around, okay, let's sell people on using this UI. They start like, you know, having design about it. All of the UI people's time becomes like in maintaining and improving the UI, which can kind of be done indefinitely. You probably raise money on the back end, and it starts to like, we've seen this concretely, like this even happened to us with Pongo. It's definitely happened to organizations, like, you know, for people who are familiar with Urbit on here, like it happened to Thon sort of over and over, but it's a very, and I don't think it's because of maliciousness. I think it's like a very easy thing to fall into, and you can sell yourself and others a story very quickly that like adoption for UI, your UI is going to be a differentiator. And like those, and these bigger problems never get solved. And then actually, I think indirectly, this is why you sort of never end up solving, like actually making the sort of trade-offs or solving like, you know, large discovery global systems at scale using blockchains, because like a lot of it gets trapped there. So you can say what you were going to say about Farcaster now, because I think they're sort of headed down that road.
I think Farcaster is a perfect example of what we're talking about right now, because if you look at the Farcaster backend, if you look at their architecture, it has a lot of issues that will require changes before it can scale to Twitter size. Also a lot of issues that sort of bar it from being a truly permissionless decentralized protocol. So, you know, you're being sort of, you know, hammered from both ends of the spectrum there. Like notably, like to me, like to run a Farcaster hub, like you have to sync all the content on the network. So right off the bat, you don't really have a sharding property. You have a replicated database, but not a distributed one. So like, okay, that straightforwardly needs to change. But you have like the exact thing we're talking about, where like the client is becoming a source of contention, both in terms of user experience, like it's not great. And then also in terms of, that's where value is being captured. So like you have contention over like, oh, like why would somebody build a better client? Because they're not going to get adopted, because then people that are pushing the protocol are also pushing their client, because that's where they're sort of generating revenue. So I think, yeah, I tried to mention this earlier. I don't know if it went through, but like, I think as a corollary to what you're saying about a company being captured by the UI that it builds, like also a thing like the profit center does, because if you commit to not trying to get network effects with a client, then you're forced to always be focusing on like, how can this protocol actually be revenue generating at the back end level? Which is important.
We ready to wind down?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, sorry guys, this kind of got off track, but also kind of an interesting discussion that we're going to have to do more of in public, because these are real problems.
Yeah, this is a weird one.
Very real today.
Yeah. All right. So thanks everybody for joining us. Make sure to mark your calendars. We do this every week at the same time, noon Eastern on X. Possibly that won't be the case in the future. God knows. Tomorrow there will be a blog post about today's topic, so look out for that. Also, check out the links that are posted below the space. You'll find developer docs if you write code. You'll also find links to our Discord where the team hangs out pretty much all day, every day. You can learn about the project. You can ask questions. You can, you know, ship post in the commons area. So until next time, thanks for listening. Thanks to our developers for their time, and goodbye to everyone.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye. Thanks.